I'm Andrew.
I'm Daniel.
I'm Vincent, and we're Midnight Juggernauts from Melbourne / Sydney /
Nobody needs to have the typical history of the band because people can go on the internet and read that. So I'm just going to hand you each the microphone, and what I really want you to do is give me some incredible historical nugget that's going to go so deep that the audience is never going to have to read a bio again about you.
Okay. Well, I used to be a conductor for, like, we have trams in Melbourne, and yes, you know, like trams, you, yes. Yeah.
Well, I can say, I remember the first time I met Andy, it was actually, I saw him playing guitar, like acoustic guitar on a bench. I met him when he was 12, and he was like a 12-year-old playing acoustic guitar doing Carcass and Slayer covers, and he knew all the songs really well. And then I knew at some point that we'd be sitting backstage in San Francisco, about to jump on stage to play some Muzak, doing an interview beforehand, and here we are. So the prophecy came true.
This is only your second album, right?
Yeah.
You have 35,000 people on Facebook.
What does that even mean?
It means that what it really means is that the whole trajectory of how a band builds its fan base, builds its career, is completely different these days. And so that's kind of, you know, I mean, if you were doing this 10 years ago, that would not have been the same opportunity, right?
Yeah, oh, no, absolutely. I think for a band like us, it's all of the fan base has come through, well, most of it has been through, like, people discovering us online, and without necessarily, it's never been like happened in one hit. So I guess you look at it now, the last 5 or 6 years, where most people over outside of Australia found out about us through, you know, finding something on MySpace or a lot of the people came along when we didn't even have a record out. And so
I remember the first tour we did of the States, we had just put out our record back in Australia, but we hadn't put it out here, and yet everyone knew all the words and blah, 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 just because, like, 50,000... Like, we got some statistic, I remember at the time, about how many people had downloaded our record for free.
On just this one link.
It was one link, yeah, one... And it had been out for a month, and it had been downloaded 50,000 times. And, like, we came to the US, I guess, on the back of one link with people downloading it 50,000 times, and we were cool with that, you know, and we still are. But
it's like a band like us, we don't really put too much money into, like, we're touring now, but we haven't done any advertising and not much promo, so it's like we're kind of relying on maybe word of mouth, and you definitely wouldn't have been able to do this 10 years ago, like a band from Australia as well, with that tyranny of distance, having to think about every time you go to new territory, it's like almost starting from scratch. But thankfully, it's not as hard as it used to be.
I could take the Living End over here, right, who I absolutely love, who I think are brilliant, and I could take the Hoodoo Gurus, who I've had on twice recently. And, you know, it's almost impossible to really turn around and say, because you were joking about Melbourne, you know, versus Sydney versus that other place that nobody in Australia seems to like or care about. You can't really put any sort of genre on, and that's a good thing, right?
I think that is a good thing. Like, I think with Australian music at the moment, like, or over the past 5 years, it's changed so much. Like, the sound of Australia now and what's popular in Australia now is completely different with what was happening, you know, 10 years before that. And now, I don't know, is there a distinctive Australian sound, do you think?
Not sure. Maybe in the, like, people think of Australia, they might think of AC/DC. And there was, like, a time when there were a lot of Australian acts just trying to follow that meat and potatoes rock sound, just because they knew that might be a pathway to get recognition overseas. But then I think when the internet came out as well, when someone started the internet, whoever that was, there was a lot more left-field acts were also starting to... It was easy for them to get some recognition, like Architecture in Helsinki and, I don't know, Kakopi and Avalanches. And,
well, the Avalanches really were the one band, I think, that for a lot of us... I mean, they're all friends of ours, but for a lot of us it was like, wow, like, these guys are just making this kind of good music, but kind of interesting music, and it's actually got legs, and it's kind of, so for us, we kind of looked up to them and it inspired us to kind of.
But it's weird how there's a lot of Australian bands where sometimes they might connect with particular territories. Like someone was saying how Hoodoo Gurus, for some reason, they're really big in Brazil.
One of the things that I read is, and I could see how this is possible, is that you're busy playing the Crystal Axis because it's really new to us, but you've been at it since 2009, right? So this record's kind of old for you, isn't it?
We were recording 2009, but also even at the start of 2010, we were still like finessing here and there. We released it here in Australia in 2010 as well. So it is all from this year, but we definitely wrote songs in we did CMJ in New York in October 2009, and we tried one or two Crystal Axis. Yeah, so we did did some tours where we played some Crystal Axis songs, but they were always evolving at the same time. But it's weird. Yeah, we're always pretty active, so as soon as we start writing, we'll put it out there, and then we're always looking to keep we're looking at the follow-up. So I think we're also eager to just keep writing as well. And
I happen to have had the pleasure twice of hanging out at South by Southwest with one Dev Hines, who is a virtual maniac in so many ways, and I love the guy.
Well, the two of us have kind of, I met him for the first time, no, I met him like years ago, but the two of us were actually, we worked a bit with Solange, who right. is like, Solange Knowles, and we were both in LA, and we kind of jammed on lots of songs, and it was kind of weird to think, what was it? It was like a writing kind of recording adventure, but we spent a lot of time also just hanging out. And like the very first day when I arrived, we had this, it was like a mansion in Santa Barbara, and we decided to go to Neverland Ranch. So we drove down there, and we couldn't find it. We got completely lost, and then that was like the start of it. And actually, for the first few days, Solange wasn't even there. So then, like, we were in like this kind of this mansion on a hill, but the living room was full of all this musical equipment, like all these keyboards and synths and toys. So then we spent a lot of time just like jamming late at night, just like doing weird Nirvana covers and whatever. And then eventually, we put our heads down, and started writing music, and it was just. It's kind of a fun experience to get involved in projects like that. Like we like being able to just keep active and keep those creative juices flowing.
Back to the people trying to put you in a box thing, right? Because so many, when you read a lot of the reviews or 75% of the interviews, everybody's trying to put you, because of the mix of bands you've toured with, everybody tries to put you in that dance, that indie, I believe the words are indie dance. Yeah. I have no idea what that means. Do you have any idea what that means?
It's like
I think it's just people with like bands with no money, like trying to get their music out there that like have a bit of dance music or something.
It's guys with hairy faces who
like hairy moustaches.
Well, I guess there is like a dance element to a lot of our music. So I mean, but then there's a lot of our songs which aren't so dancey. So then it should be, if we're trying to describe our music, if we could hyphenate like many more words, like if there was like...
Or maybe don't bother, right?
Yeah, we should try to do like a symbol like Prince. If he did
there
like an infinity sign with like a question mark at the end.
Or like the Blue Oyster Cult.
Yeah.
There's a rumor you're planning on making your home somewhere else other than Australia in the near future. Is that true?
Yeah, it's... Coming from Australia, it is pretty painful doing those long-haul flights every time you want to do a tour. So if you do have like a hub where we live like the monkeys together, but in the middle of some place like between New York, LA, Paris, San Francisco.
That's like in the middle of the water.
Bermuda Triangle?
Yeah.
Maybe.
We flew over there.
Cuba.
Celebrity fans make for great PR for about 5 minutes, but really... What I've read about this band, and I go on all of the, you know, the sites to read about it, is more about the audience. And the audience, you know, you can come to San Francisco on a Monday night, and as I was walking in the club, people are pretty darn excited, you know? So that's, there's something to be said for all the cool, oh man, you know, he loves me, and you read about that. But, you know, the audiences are really attached, right?
We're hoping that people are going to be here on a Monday night in San Francisco.
The laptop. You know, what happens if the laptop, you know, you went to the Apple party and...
And so we all got these fresh new laptops. And then when you're touring, that's pretty much what we live out of, because you don't have... You don't talk
clothes,
to each other.
You don't have bags. Yeah. You don't have friends. You just have your laptop.
That's basically how it is.
I'm sad now.
That's all we do.
So if one of those disappeared, it'd be like losing a limb. So if we did lose a laptop, we'd stop the tour, return to the previous city. But that actually...
That happened
in Rome,
recently,
didn't it?
Yeah.
We were playing in Rome, and then one morning we had to fly from Rome to
London
to play Lovebox. This big festival there, and we're like on a big stage, and then we realized that we lost a laptop and all this gear, and then... And we were pretty much crying that whole day because we missed the start of the set.
We made it, though.
But it's, like, really stressful when you're, like, touring and you're playing a show every night in, like, different countries. And then if one thing goes wrong, then it kind of ruins your whole afternoon.
Did you DJ before you were the band? What was the motivation to kind of share that? Because a lot of bands do it these days, and half of them just really don't. They just kind of show up with a laptop and they just punch stuff, you know?
The motivation, paying the rent, maybe, was a big motivation. We're definitely not DJs. Like, I guess DJ culture, there's like a, you know, there's lots of people we know who are really good DJs. And I think for us, it was this fun thing, which we then decided we'd try and get good at. But I don't think we are.
Like, we're definitely not DJs trying to do trick sets. Like, when you see DJs doing, like, playing, like, 15 seconds of that song, then 15 seconds of that song. But I actually don't enjoy watching that either, those trick sets. Yeah. So it's like, I'm happy to, like, let a song play for, like, 5 minutes. If you want to hear 5 minutes of a good track, then that's cool.
We just like to play music that we like.
Yeah, that's what it's about. Oh, and the rent.
So I've invented this thing called a musical sandwich. And it's two of your songs as the bread, Mr. DJs, and songs by anybody else you want to play in between.